For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome to Houston Sports Talk with your host, Robert Land.
Thanks for checking into the best Houston sports podcast, now part of the Believe Network. And joining me is co-host Stephen Kerr, 65 plus years in sports journalism. Between the two of us, we grew up in Houston, so you get the passion of a fan, but the objectivity of veteran journalist. So what's on tap for this one? Well, in a few minutes, we look at a versatile weapon the Texans added. And hey, the Astros players might be revolting on Espada. But the major news, Stephen, is the Rockets bucked lottery odds and jumped from the 9th spot to the 3rd spot in the first round. Did they get lucky? Because this is considered one of the worst drafts ever.
I think they did, Robert, and for a number of reasons, because it just helps them with more options. I mean, it gives them, you know, they have options with any of their draft picks, obviously. But having a pick this high, I mean, they could choose to keep it, add another young guy to the roster, you know, with one that already has quite a few. But if they added a player that could really help them, then that's certainly an option. Well, they could also trade it for a win now piece. They could even trade down. I mean, they could trade, you know, say within the top 10 or 15, still, you know, get a first round pick, but receive a trade piece along with it. So, I mean, there are a number of options that they could use. And hey, anytime you get the top 3 pick, regardless of what kind of a year it is draft-wise, I mean, that's definitely something that you hope doesn't happen too often, because it means you're in the playoffs. But and maybe this is the last time the Rockets will have to worry about that for a while. But you always rejoice when that happens, though.
Well, you look at this as glass half full, and I'm just going to go the other way and say this draft is so weak that the potential Rockets trade partners might see the 3rd pick as a potential bad contract. That's how poor it is, since you'd be paying top 3 draft talent to a guy with role player upside instead of all-star upside, which it seems like, you know, you don't hear any of them being mentioned as future all-stars. However, a team could fall in love with a certain player. You never know. So I'll do my Stephen Kerr and be more positive, or more likely the Rockets could fall in love with a couple of guys and want to keep the pick. Stephen, even in a bad draft, one or two players typically surprise. For example, the 2013 draft, the first 3 picks were Anthony Bennett, Oladipo, and Otto Porter. Nothing great there, but Giannis went at 15, Gobert at 27. Although I saw an anonymous NBA executive, Stephen, that said, this looks like 2013 without Giannis.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, look, there's got to be at least one or two guys in this class that, as you said, they may not be rated that highly in the draft, but you know, maybe some of these guys will have a chip on their shoulder and they'll come in and really do something. But, you know, you were talking about adding depth. Well, you know, that's something that the Rockets could do too. They could add some depth with this high pick and not necessarily have to throw them in the fire right away. I know the Athletic, you know, they have the Rockets taking 7'2 big man Donovan Klingon out of Connecticut. And there's one of 2 Connecticut players that are supposed to go in this draft. You know, so that might be a possibility that, yeah, you've got Steven Adams, you got Şengün, but you don't know what Adams' health is going to be. He may not even be here beyond next season. So if you wanted to take a flyer on a guy like that, not have to throw him into the fire that quickly, you know, that may be an option that they're considering. But that, again, I think that's to the Rockets' advantage.
Yeah, 2 names get knocked around a lot in the last few days, or 2 of them have been. And you mentioned Klingon. You know, he's a defensive anchor on that back-to-back championship UConn team. And then there was Kentucky guard Reed Shepard, who shot 52%. From 3, 52%. I'm going to repeat that, from 3. And he's a really good passer. Now, Shepard's got some defensive liabilities, you can say, at 6'3 without much of a wingspan. Tomorrow, draft analyst Cooper Klein is going to join me to break down the potential draft prospects. But Stephen, I asked my Twitter followers who intrigues them the most, which one of those guys intrigues you the most? And I added Rob Dillingham and Stephon Castle.
That would be the other UConn guy that I was referring to.
Yeah, the voting was pretty close, but it basically came down to a virtual tie between Klingon and Shepard for all the fan base that were on Twitter. So,
well, you know, I mean, either one of those players, certainly they've been mentioned as possibilities too. And, you know, if one's not in the top three, you know, somebody else may move up or drop down into that. So getting back to Klingon, you know, he did have some ankle and foot injuries, but of course, a lot of big men do that. He came back, still had a good season. And you mentioned his defense, Robert. He's good at shutting down the paint and considered above average at defensive drop coverage. So, you know, the Rockets, if they're looking for defense, maybe that's somebody they take a chance on, but they also need shooting. So, you know, some of these other guys that could possibly lend a hand in that area, like Shepard, for instance, they might be wanting to take a look at him for that reason.
Yeah, Klingon actually reminds me defensively a little bit of Brooke Lopez, which is ironic because that was almost a Rocket last year. And, you know, if you're a Rockets fan, you got to be happy with the Rockets lottery luck the last few years. I mean, how they've landed in the top four in the last four drafts, even though they never landed at number one, you know, it's less than a 50-50 shot that you get in the top three. So it's pretty cool that they've got in the top three times. And Stephen, I just wish I was smart enough to do the math so I could tell you what the odds were they'd get in the top four for four straight lotteries. Cause it's pretty rough odds to do that four straight lotteries.
I bet it'd be a single digit number, Robert, if we had to take a guess. And yeah, you know, this actually makes the James Harden trade look even better because that pick that moved up to number three was the number nine pick that the Rockets got from the Brooklyn Nets in the James Harden trade. And you've still got a few more draft picks in the next couple years from that trade. So, you know, while at first, and I think even I had my skepticism, Robert, and we talked about it when the Harden trade happened, you know, the Rockets really didn't get that much out of the trade because they mostly got draft picks. Well, you're turning some of these draft picks into NBA players, and now you've got a number three pick that you're either going to use, you know, and take a guy, or are you going to trade it? So the James Harden trade just, you know, still keeps on giving.
Yeah, Tari Eason was one of the guys that you already got from that deal, and then you add this pick. And then I want to say, and I apologize if this is wrong, but if I remember correctly, they were able to turn one of those assets from that trade into what became the Cam Whitmore pick this past year. So it's a roundabout. It's too long to explain, but I believe that's the way it ended up. So that's pretty good so far, like Cam Tari and this pick. And like you said, there's still three more years of this.
Yeah, and again, they could do all sorts of things. You know, they could trade any one of those picks in the next couple of years and get some additional players that could help them. So that trade's not done yet. But, you know, it's interesting that Rafael Stone, he wasn't anywhere near the whole thing when the lottery went down. He was in the air. He was coming back from France, I believe, where he was scouting, and he was on his way to Chicago. So maybe it was a good thing that he wasn't there, Robert, and maybe he should just stay away. If you're going to be in the lottery, just stay away, and you be good luck, and they end up getting a top three pick.
Yeah, I mean, I also saw, you know, he did make a statement after the pick, and it basically was he acted a little bit like they were more likely to keep the pick than trade it because it's higher in the lottery. I have to sort of decipher him because he's such a lawyer speak.
He does the lawyer speak better than most people, I think. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see what happens there, Stephen. But I mean, you know, it's like you said, the big thing is it just gives you more options. That's the big thing.
Yeah, and you know, there's nothing wrong with options. Let me tell you, the more options you have, the more chance you might be getting it wrong, but there's the more chance you have of getting it right.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, let's switch gears now to the Texans. And last week, I had NFL draft expert Joe DeLeon, one of our Believe colleagues, to break down the Texans draft pick by pick. It's worth a listen if you missed it. The secretly potential good pickup for the Texans a few days ago was a trade for wide receiver and really good special teamer Ben Skowronek. And I'm going to screw that name up, I'm sure, for at least a
Skowronek, Skowronek. Yeah, it could be either one of those two.
Yeah, no, I looked it up, and I still probably screwed up. But, you know, they swapped a 6 for a 7, Steven. He's 6'3", 224 pounds, so he has size and versatility for even fullback or H-back. You know, I'm hearing stuff like that. You've seen him line up like that with the Rams. Perhaps he's a legit threat to Andrew Beck's roster spot.
Well, it could be Andrew Beck, yeah. And, I mean, he was 5th on the depth chart, I think, with the Rams. And, you know, talking about, you know, as far as wide receivers go, he would be probably challenging for that spot with the Texans. But, you know, let's not discount special teams. He was very good on special teams. In fact, he was a special teams captain. And that is something that, you know, fans may not think too much about. But a pickup like that could really make a difference in the Texans special teams. And that certainly makes a difference, especially in the postseason. So it could be one of those pickups that, you know, quietly might be a good one for the Texans, even if it's just on special teams. But at the very least, he adds a little more depth to the wide receiver position, which, you know, in some cases is still a little bit unclear.
Yeah, it feels like that Caserio is doubling down on his love of special teams, and he was great at doing that in New England. He looks to be doing a pretty good job as well here in Houston. And, you know, he's concerned, I think, because, you know, they've changed the rules, and we don't know how that's going to work out. By the way, for his 3 years in the NFL, he has 58 catches for 575 yards, so nearly 10 yards of reception. But like you said, mostly special teams guy. They also signed, by the way, Texans signed Browns linebacker Jacob Phillips, a former third-round pick out of LSU just a few years ago. He missed last season with a pectoral injury. He's only played 20 of a possible 67 games in the last few years. So very, Kevin Johnson-esque, I get what you would call it. Tons of injuries. And Steven, I'm guessing Caserio is just hoping this is a Blake Cashman type resurrection.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. That's a good comparison. And, you know, again, you're taking a flyer on a guy that's had an injury history, but maybe this is the year he comes back and does something for you. And at the very least, it'll add depth to the linebacker position, something the Texans certainly need right now.
Was there anything else Texans related that you wanted to hit? Because those were the two main things. And I mean,
well, I know they had their rookie camp, you know, this past week. And of course, you know, there's always things that come out of that. But I don't know that there's anything that really jumped out at me about it. You know, it's just kind of cool to see the guys in. And, you know, even they signed most of their draft picks. And, you know, it's a lot easier to do that now than it was a number of years ago. But even the ones who haven't signed were still there in rookie camp. So that's always a good sign. And I'm pretty sure they're not going to have any issues with that, you know, come training camp or beyond.
Yeah. And if you are young, or I don't know, you don't even have to be that young, I guess, because it's been so long ago, but Steven will remember this. It used to be in the NFL that guys were always holding out, draft picks were holding out, because that, like, now it's slotted, you know, sort of what you're going to pay these guys. But back then they were trying to get every last nickel, and the Oilers, not known as, throwing around dollar bills like it was James Harden at the club or anything like that.
No, definitely not. And that was, in fact, a lot of times even top draft picks would do that. I mean, I remember Emmitt Smith from the Cowboys. It was the year that the Cowboys were still doing their training camp here in Austin, and I was covering them because that's where I live, is here in Austin, by the way. Well, Emmitt Smith was holding out that year, so he wasn't even there. You know, I interviewed everybody else, Aikman and Irvin and all those guys, but not Emmitt Smith. So yeah, you don't see that as much just because of the way that the salaries are structured with rookies. So that is certainly a good thing if you're a fan of an NFL team. It's very little of that you have to worry about now.
Quick note for fans of Houston Sports Talk. After the Texans schedule release Wednesday night, I'm going to have friend and Chronicle contributor Steph Stradley on the show. Look forward to that. I hope you guys will check that one out. Now let's move to the Astros, Steven. They go 3-3 on the Yankees-Tigers road trip. Christian Javier returns to the rotation, but got let up. Yuck, yuck, yuck. And outside of the health of the starting pitchers, are you seeing any hope the last few days?
Well, we're at least starting to see some signs of life, Robert. And I mean, you got to start somewhere. You take positives where you can get them. I mean, they looked terrible in the first two games against the Yankees, but then they came back, you know, salvaged that game, went into Detroit, won the first game, probably, you know, certainly would have liked to have had a sweep. I mean, they've had two game sweeps, but to me, a sweep isn't really a sweep unless you do a minimum of three games. And they haven't had a chance to do that yet, but they did take two out of three from the Tigers. Justin Verlander getting to face his old team and beat them once again. Thank you very much. Well, the Astros are 15-25, Robert, and you know, if history is certainly not on their side, because since 1901, only seven teams who started out with that record, the 15-25, finished with a winning record when the season was over, and even fewer, as in three, made the playoffs. But you do have to remember, there is the extra wild card, and the weakness of the AL West, the Astros are definitely not out of it, and they've got a 10-game homestand coming up, Robert, and guess what? Seven of those 10 games are against the AL West. So if you're going to make some ground, get yourself out of the cellar and get back in contention, there's no better time than the present.
All right, Stephen, this is a little question I had for you. I didn't prep you, but I don't think you're going to find it too difficult. Espada's finally moved red-hot Jeremy Peña up in the batting order. And as we record Monday afternoon, he's hitting 340 with an 855 OPS. Stephen, who is your ideal top four in the lineup? Give me one, two, three, four. Who would you like to see?
Well, certainly you're going to keep Altuve in the leadoff spot. I think Peña, that actually seems to be a good move. I mean, we thought that Yordan Alvarez would be the guy. And, you know, the statistics proved it as far as baseball was concerned, but it just hasn't happened. I actually think that's a pretty neat move to put Jeremy in there. I would leave him there and let's see what happens. Kyle Tucker certainly has been hitting well. I'd put him in the number three slot. And I guess, you know, the cleanup spot is one of those things that, I don't know, it's been kind of back and forth and kind of a toss-up of who I might put there. And, you know, you move Bregman down in the lineup, so you're certainly not going to put him there at the moment. So that'd be kind of my only question mark, I guess, right now.
So you're leading off with Altuve, so that nothing different there.
No.
And you got Tucker in the three spot. Who did you say was your two-hole hitter?
Well, I would keep Peña there for the moment. Yeah, he's in the cleanup spot.
Okay, right? You want to keep him in the cleanup spot.
Let's keep him in the cleanup spot. So it's the two-hole that I meant. That's really the mystery.
You don't want Yordan in the two-hole anymore.
Well, at this point, I mean, he's not hitting well. So I don't know. Do you put him, I mean, do you put him number five? I mean, I can't even fathom that. That's where the order gets a little sticky. But yeah, I meant the cleanup spot for Peña, because he is getting at least some of his power back. And he's, you know, that's where you drive in runs, and that's what you want.
Yeah, you got to hope he comes around, because if the Yordan's going to hit like this all year, it's going to be a long, long season. Because, I mean, it already is a long season, obviously, but like there's no hope, literally no hope with the offense getting going. If Yordan all of a sudden goes from MVP candidate to basically, you know, he's worse than Jeremy Peña, you know, and no disrespect to Jeremy, but I mean, he cannot be, your power hitter can't be worse than Jeremy Peña.
I just have to believe, Robert, that Yordan is just too good of a player for this to last all year long. You know, so maybe you put him back in the two spot, keep him there, and just try to let him hit his way out of it. Because, I mean, you're running out of options in the batting order of guys that you've had to move down, like Bregman, for instance. You're not going to put Yonner Diaz in there, I don't think. So maybe that is the best thing to do. But at this point, you know, the hitting, while it's still a question mark, you got the runners in scoring position issue that's still happening. Like I said, at least you're seeing some signs of life with this team. They just need to get on a good run. That's what they're lacking right now. They need a good 6, 7, 8 game winning streak to get them back into this. And as I said, no better time than right now when you've got the AL West coming up, seven of your next 10 games.
Yeah, they need several 6 to 8 game winning streaks the way they are right now. And, you know, Lo Perfido's hitting 321 just quietly. Would you like to see him play more?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you brought him up, this is what you were expecting him to do. You know, it's always the question, can you hit big league pitching? But you know, he's looked very good out there. And John Singleton, I mean, he's actually showing some signs that he's certainly getting more production out of first base than you've had. So maybe these are two guys that you just keep playing a little bit more and see what happens.
Here are the Astros offensive rankings across baseball. They're number one in batting average, number seven in OPS. Sounds good so far, right? 14th in runs, though, 19th in OPS with runners in scoring position, and 28th in home runs with runners in scoring position, not clutch. And then the Astros also, if you look at their WAR by position, at first base, they're 29th in Major League Baseball. At third base, they're 30th. So, Steven, sometimes you got to say the mean things out loud.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, of course, the first base issue, you know, we know a lot of that is due to Abreu, and he's no longer there. I don't think you're going to see it rise that much with, you know, whether it's Singleton or Diaz or Dubon, whoever's playing first base, or Lopofito, even for that matter. Third base is just a real disappointment. And we've talked about Alex Bregman, you know, ad nauseum from the hitting standpoint. But even the third base, I mean, you see it down that low, that's just not customary for Alex Bregman. So all of those things, Robert, are very important, and they add up. And that's exactly why the Astros are 10 games under 500. It's, you know, they sound like little things, but they really aren't when you put them in the big picture. Because runners in scoring position, I mean, that's a pretty big deal. You could have had a lot more runs if they had come through with the runners in scoring position issue, which they haven't for the most part.
Yeah, you might as well rename Breggy Bomb to Breggy Pop-Up. That's his new
Breggy
salsa.
Breggy Pop-Up, yeah. He does more of that than, I think, any kind of contact this season so far.
All right, so the big story, we talked about it off the top of the show. USA Today's Bob Nightingale, an interesting report came out over the weekend, story that he wrote where he said, quote, two prominent Astros have privately expressed complaints about Espada's communication skills in recent weeks. What did you think when you read that, Steven?
Well, I was a little surprised, Robert, at least, you know, because everything you would hear when he got the job and after, you know, in training, spring training and that sort of thing is how communicative Joe Espada was being, that he, you know, he was kind of telling the players what was going to happen and what wasn't. So I guess that caught me a little by surprise, but I think that, you know, it's always easy to look for holes when you're losing. I also wonder, remember, Joe Espada had multiple interviews with other teams for managerial positions over the years. And I'm not saying that the Astros didn't know about whatever issues they may have had with it, but maybe they chose to overlook it. And, you know, maybe they saw something that the Astros are now having to live with. I don't know. I mean, I can only guess, but maybe that was one of the issues is, you know, whether he's just not as good of a communicator as we like to think he is, or there's something else. But while you can't put everything on Espada, you know, it is on his watch. You got to look at it at some point and say, how much is he contributing to it? Especially when you're talking about in the clubhouse where you already have lost some leadership over the last few years, as we've talked about on this podcast, you really need your manager to step forward and deliver that. And yeah, I know he's a first year manager. He's still learning, but he's been a bench coach. He's been around long enough to observe, I think, you know, what you should do and what you shouldn't for the most part.
I would assume when he was hired, some veterans would have stepped up and said, yeah, this is a guy that we need to keep around. You cannot have interviewed him without talking to the Astros players in the clubhouse and the veterans. So this really is disconcerting because you're like, well, the veterans liked him, thought he was going to do good. And now they're saying he's not doing good, which is, you know, it's a real surprise. And you would also hope, speaking of communication, you would also hope the same guys that are talking to Bob Nightingale, I don't know who that those could be, but he's saying prominent veterans, so we can take a guess there. But yeah, you would hope that they would have voiced that thought to Joe Espada, maybe voiced that thought to Dana Brown, you know, because, I mean, the Astros veterans have so much respect. I mean, if we're talking veterans, I assume he's getting this from somebody good like Verlander or, you know,
Bregman, Altuve.
Bregman, one of the main guys.
Yeah. Well, now, if I remember correctly, Robert, there were veterans who stepped forward and said they wanted a spot for the job. I heard that, you know, before the hire or after the hire was made. So, you know, either the fact that, you know, they thought he would be the guy and some things aren't turning out quite as they had hoped. So, yeah, it is a mystery. But I think it's, I guess, in a way, it's not really that surprising when you're 15 and 25, there's all kinds of things going on that we don't even know about. And, you know, perhaps the players, or some of them anyway, just feel like he hasn't been the type of guy that's been able to rally the troops, so to speak. But I think it's as much on the veterans as it is on the manager. And, you know, some guys just need to step forward and take that leadership role. I think they're in a better position to do that than the manager in most cases. So I almost have to put that more on the players than on Espada when you're talking about that type of leadership. Now, if it is a question of communication, you know, telling them at the last minute they're not going to be in the lineup or you are. Well, those are things that, you know, that's definitely on the manager and that needs to change.
I mean, what's he doing? Is he telling Yordan Alvarez, hey, can you can your swing be a little bit more like, let's say Jake Myers, you know, what is he telling Bregman? Can you please not hit for the first 2 months of the season and just stink and be awful? Like what does he have to tell, or what does he have to inspire? What does he have to do for guys like Yordan and Bregman and Abreu and some of these guys that just have been god awful or just not, you know, living up to their baseball card, quote unquote. I bring that old cliche out again. And, you know, how is he told these pitchers to pitch so they can get on the injured list? You know, I just don't get what Espada can do when Astros aren't getting screwed by their young guys. They're getting screwed by their veterans. The young pitchers that they had to bring up that had no business being in the major leagues didn't perform well. But by the same token, I mean, these guys were not exactly grade A farm prospects. I mean, we thought Eric Geddy might be decent, but the rest of them, I just don't get it. Like, what is Espada supposed to do with this mess? These guys have to start playing better.
Yeah, that's just what it comes down to, Robert. And we'll never know this, but how much do you think these problems would persist if Dusty Baker were still here? I mean, I think that, you know, he's not going to prevent the pitching injuries any more than Joe Espada. And as far as, you know, some of the veterans not hitting, I mean, I don't think you could put that blame on Baker or anyone who's managing the team. You know, ultimately, you are responsible for stepping up and producing. And when you have guys like Joey Loperfido coming in, and I know he's, you know, a much smaller sample size, but he's still paying attention. He's doing what he's supposed to do and what he's brought up to do. You know, and some of these other guys, you know, Yonder Diaz doing okay. Jeremy Pena is having a better year. But when you have guys like Yordan and Alex Bregman, I mean, you know, Jose Altuve is still having a pretty decent year. He's not hitting that well with runners in scoring position, but to some extent he is. So you can't put a lot of that on him. But that's really what it boils down to, Robert. It's the players who aren't coming through. And as far as the pitchers are concerned, a number of these guys just weren't ready. I mean, Eric Geddy is not, I don't deem him ready for major league hitting yet. So that's the biggest problem. You've had to dip into the pool that's already thin to begin with when these guys just aren't ready to jump in and try to save your skin and save your season.
Should I care that they've DFA'd Corey Jolks or Brandon Belak?
Yeah, that's the other move they made this week, is they DFA'd two of their homegrown prospects, Brandon Belak, who was out of options. You couldn't have sent him down anyway, so you had to do something. And Corey Jolks, I mean, it's not like Corey was stinking up AAA. The problem is you had a lot of guys passing him on the ladder. You had, you know, Joey Loperfido, who's now, you know, with the big club at the moment. You got Pedro Leon, he's been on fire lately. He's starting to pass him up. You know, Jacob Melton is, you know, he's bound for AAA pretty soon. So I think Corey Jolks just got in a numbers game. And as far as Brandon Belak is concerned, you know, Sean Dubin, he's been doing pretty well. He's got more upside. He can give you multiple innings just like Belak. I think Belak just ran out of chances to really wow the pitching coaches and the manager to keep his spot in the Astros rotation, whether it's in the bullpen or a spot start here and there.
Yeah, I mean, people forget. Corey Jolks is now in his late 20s. He plays left field. It's a logjam in left field, but it's hard if you can't play all three outfield positions or multiple positions. And, you know, he doesn't have the speed really to be a center fielder. So,
and he's a right-handed hitter, and you've got, you know, quite a few of those already in your outfield. So,
Steven, our YouTube watchers see a scrolling reminder at the bottom of the screen about our Houston Sports History playlist on YouTube, which I'll note has tons of interviews with Houston athletes, broadcasters, and journalists. Plus, if a Houston sports figure passed away in our decade of doing this show, we typically paid tribute to him. I bring this up because 4 years ago, when an ex-Astros player and hitting coach Dennis Menke passed away, I was joined by the H-Town radio legend and ex-Astros broadcaster Jerry Trupiano. And this weekend, Menke's daughter replied to the video saying she stumbled on it when she was missing her dad. And, you know, I can't believe it, but she thanked us, which meant a lot, you know, and it went on to say that the Astrodome was her playground as a kid. Very cool. And Stephen, she also told a story about Yogi. We had told this Yogi Berra story with Dennis Menke in the tribute. And then did you catch what she said about Yogi?
Yeah, I remember you sent me the message. I didn't see it on YouTube, but I remember you sent it to me. And there were a lot of great things in there.
She got
the Yogi story that she talked about, though.
Yeah, she got her first $100 bill.
That's right.
As a graduation present.
Yeah, from Yogi Berra. That's right, the $100 bill. You know, that's the kind of thing that'll send chills up your spine, Robert. And, you know, I know most listeners have probably never done a podcast or never done a sports radio show like I have and you have. Those are the things, those are the comments that make doing this worthwhile. And it just goes to show, you never know who's listening, because here, you know, that tribute was done. How long ago has it been now since Mickey died? Has it been that long?
Yeah, 4 years.
Wow. It 4 years later, someone comes across that and it really touches them. And it just happens to be a family member. Man, that just, I couldn't stop thinking about it when you shared that with me. What an awesome thing to say. You know, imagine all the many memories that were going through her head when she was listening to that and saw that tribute. And I think it even said in the message, Robert, that she was just on YouTube looking around because she was missing her dad that day. And she happened to come across our podcast. That, man, that just about, that brought tears to my eyes. It really did.
Yeah. Look for the link to the Menke interview or the Menke tribute that we did at the end of this show. I'm going to put it up there if you're watching this on YouTube. And then there are 200 videos on the Houston Sports History playlist with tributes to. And I'm just going to run through. These are people that have all passed away over the course of our show. Moses Malone, Bill Yeoman, Guy V. Lewis, Muhammad Ali, Vin Scully, Bill Fitch, Arnold Palmer, Gordie Howe, Bob Watson, Jimmy Wynn, Hank Aaron, Don Sutton, Harlem Globetrotter Curly Neal, ex-Rockets owner Charlie Thomas, Fred Akers, Doug Jones, Jesus Alou, Gene Elston, Jack Buck, Curly Culp, and Oilers head coaches Ed Biles and Jack Pardee. Most of those tributes are with Houston sports journalists who covered them or players who knew them. There are also tributes to major Houston events like the Clutch City Rockets, the 86 Rockets, the UCLA Game of the Century, the Battle of the Sexes, Billie Jean King versus Bobby Riggs, the WHA Houston Arrows, and the Love You Blue Oilers. So, Stephen, it's just hours of listening for your summer road trips.
Man, you talk about a who's who of names. And, you know, you've talked to a lot of those people, Robert, or if you haven't talked to them directly, as you said, you talked to players who knew them, coaches who knew them. If you really want a lesson in Houston sports history, you know, especially if you haven't known a lot of these names that we talked about, go back and listen and watch those, because a lot of the history that you see is why the way things are now. I mean, that's what history is. It leads us to where we are now. And Houston sports teams, you know, they're having a pretty good time of it the last few years. You know, we've won more championships, but back then, listen, a lot of those guys were great. And just because they didn't win championships didn't mean that they didn't contribute, you know, and weren't a part of the Houston community. So that is some great listening and watching right there. And you got plenty of hours and plenty of people to choose from.
Yeah. I mean, with the Yeoman, for instance, in that tribute, we had one of his coaches, we had one of his players, and we had Tom Franklin, who was the voice of the Cougars and covered the Cougars for years and was a Cougar himself. You know, there's guys like Kenny Hand, like I said, Truppiano, we already mentioned, but a bunch of people that actually covered them and talked to them and got to know them and stuff like that. So it's really good stuff. We hope you find some of that stuff on the channel, but more good stuff coming up on the show in the next couple of days. So stay tuned for that. More great guests. We'll talk to you again soon.
You're listening to Houston Sports Talk.
Hey, don't forget to support us by subscribing and commenting on YouTube. You can always listen to us on Spotify, Apple, or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about us and share our show links on social media. Spread the word, everybody. Thanks for listening.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.